Okay, so we have to sound wise. Alright, so last time we looked at the one-dimensional, what I call kinematic variables. So if you want to describe the motion of something, you have to, we have to be very analytical about it because we're scientists and we're not interested in how the projectile feels. We're interested in knowing exactly where it is and where it's going to be in some amount of time. So we look at position. We also look at the velocity, acceleration, and the time. And note that these are not independent at all. So if you really want to specify the motion of something, you really need to know how these things change with time. We define the average speed to be the distance traveled over time. And there is a subtlety here, okay? What is my average speed if I walk 5 steps this way and I walk 5 steps back and I stop at the same point? And I ask, what is my average speed over the time that I was moving? Your initial x is here, whatever it is. Your final x is here, whatever it is. And you might think, based on that, that your delta x is zero, so your average speed is zero. But that's not really true because you saw me moving. Speed has no direction. I was clearly moving, so I had some average speed over that period. So, because it doesn't depend on direction, you would actually add the distance of the 5 steps this way to the distance of the 5 steps that way, being the total distance that I traveled during that time, in order to get my average speed. Okay, divide by the time. If we talk about velocity, the difference between speed and velocity is that velocity includes the direction. So, I may have a velocity this way, and I may have a velocity this way, and those things actually have opposite signs. I can move a delta x this way, and then move a delta x this way, and because we have to take direction into account, the average velocity now is zero, because basically I have not displaced myself over that period of time. Okay, so they're different beasts. There's this directional piece with the velocity. That may seem a little subtle right now, I think, as we begin to work our way into multidimensional motion and we have to do more than just work with signs, positive or negative, for direction. That kind of distinction will become clearer for you. So that is sort of the concept that we use for finite distances and times, but that leaves a lot to be desired because a lot of things can change in that time interval. Okay, so if you really want to understand the motion in fine detail, you need to understand it at every point as a function of time. And the way to do that is to basically look at that same quantity, but look at it in the limit of very short time intervals. Okay, and in the limit of a very short time interval, that difference becomes what is known as the derivative of x with respect to time. Or you can think of basically taking this finite distance x and this finite time t and shrinking at least the t piece down as small as possible. But in doing so, of course, no matter really how fast you are, the x part is also very small. So we call them differentials, and you just think of them as really little tiny things. So the instantaneous velocity is, you think of in the same way as the velocity, but it's little dx over little dt, or in the limit of where the time goes to zero. We'll typically give that a symbol v, and if I just say velocity, this is what I mean. Similarly, we talk about average acceleration being the change in the velocity over a period of time, and we can define instantaneous acceleration as this in the limit of delta t going to zero, or the derivative of the V with respect to T. Because V is the derivative of X with respect to T, that means the acceleration is the second derivative of the position with respect to time. So you can see that they are related. If I change the function for the position, if I have a mathematical function that describes it as a function of time, then the derivative of that changes and the second derivative of that changes. So they're all quite related. Okay? So that's sort of where we are. Where we were at the end of class last time. So I wanted to take a moment and do a couple of examples. We aren't going to do that one. Let's do this one. Okay, so I pointed you in an email to this physics simulation, motion simulation. We actually have set up to do the real thing with a little camera motion sensor and an interface and graphing software, but it turns out that we didn't quite get it all debugged yesterday. So the idea, though, is you can play games with the position, which is this upper graph, okay, and the velocity, which is the lower graph, and the acceleration, which is the middle graph, and the acceleration, which is the bottom graph. And you can move this guy. He'll move back and forth. So, for example, we can start him at minus 10. We can say that we want him to start moving very fast, but his acceleration is 0. Okay. And he'll go, and because he crashes into the wall. Okay. But you can actually look that if the acceleration is 0, the velocity, that means the derivative of the velocity is 0. Okay? So it's constant. It's a straight line, all right, until he hits the wall. But if the velocity is constant, then you have a non-zero slope, dx dv is positive, so you'll have a positive slope to the x. So he's just moving at a constant velocity all the way to the end. That didn't work. Okay, Bill Gates isn't into physics, I guess. All right, so we can do something a little bit more fun. Start him at minus 10. Give him a velocity forward, okay? And now, so he's going to be moving forward from the end point, but I want to give him a small negative acceleration. All right, remember, negative acceleration is the change in the velocity with respect to time. So it's not saying that the velocity is going to be negative. It's saying that it will be changing in such a way that it will be getting smaller as a function of time and eventually reversing sign. All right, so I have to change the scale here. So it starts at minus 10, and I hope this works. And he's going forward. Note that his velocity throughout this is positive, okay? It's just because he has a negative acceleration, it's getting smaller with time. And then when it crosses 0, notice that's the turnaround point. He stops, literally, okay? When he stops, note that He was moving forward, moving forward, moving forward, moving forward, and now he starts to move back, 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 right? Okay, so that's the turnaround point. And then he goes, and now his velocity is becoming more and more negative because this acceleration is still going, right? He's still basically getting more and more negative. Works that time. Okay, so you can play games with this. If you want, you can really futz with him. Really good for parties. But now you can begin to see a lot of funky things going on. So the acceleration being constant, it really looks a whole lot like what we had earlier. It started with a non-zero velocity, but he has now a positive acceleration. So you can see that the velocity is increasing with time. That's what it means to say you have a positive acceleration. It's constant, so this thing seems to be rising with roughly a constant slope through this period, okay? Note that his position, though, he's going faster and faster. So for every little bit of time, he's going to cover a little bit more space. So you'll see this curve is sort of increasing with time. It's got a little bit of a increasing slope.
Then the acceleration reduces and it goes to zero actually and starts to go negative. He's still moving forward,
but notice that the slope changes for the velocity here. And you'll note that the inflection changes here. Instead of increasing like this, it's going to start decreasing. Alright, so these are all related. And you need to learn to systematically think through them and understand the relationship between each of these three variables as we go. On exam, I have been known to do things like hand you the acceleration curve and ask you to plot the other two. Or give you this one and ask you to plot schematically, roughly, these other, for example. So you need to be able to move from one to the other. Okay, any questions? I put the link on the web, so you're welcome to play with this all you want.
Special there, yes.
This is a minor question. So, for example, on a test hypothetically, would we have to visually chart the velocity and acceleration going on the curve of position visually, or would we get the equation of the speeds that would be derivative with the calculus?
So the question is, would it be sort of a visual,
yeah,
conceptual thing, or would it be specifically calculated via the calculus or the derivatives and such?
Could you use both?
Could be either.
Depends a little on my mood. I'm pissed off at somebody, it'll be both. Okay, so this is a special day. Today
I'm going to take you to a very special space in the midst of physics nirvana. And this bit of turf is a place where you will want to go back to frequently. It will bring you great peace as you are dealing with complex problems to finally get them to the point that you can come back to this little set of stuff that we're going to do today. One aspect of this whole course is it will build, okay? So the complex problems that we'll be doing in 3 weeks from now will be deconvoluted into this in many instances, okay? So this is pretty important, and because of that, I need to show you, I'm going to show you some equations that you'll be using all the time. And the reason that we're going to go through how you get those equations is because I want you to actually understand them
And one of the reasons, if no other, to understand how you got them is because they're only valid under certain circumstances, and you need to know when to use them and when not to use them, and why you might use them in a certain case. So, anyway, let us start where we have been already. Let's look at the average velocity, which I'll signify by just putting the subscript AVE, okay? And let's think about what that means. What I'd like to do is to use a specific example where we're going to have the velocity as a function of time equal a constant. Okay, so that's a very specific thing. And now let's look at that curve. If we say that the velocity as a function of time is constant, obviously the average velocity is just that value, whatever it is. So we're going to pick a particular value, and here it is. V of t is a constant. All right. But if that is true, this is V of t, but it's also V average in this case. All right. And if we look at this equation, delta x is equal to V average times delta t. So if I choose a delta t in here, then by our definition of what we mean when we define the average velocity, the distance, delta x, is going to be equal to this delta t times this V average, which is just the area of that box. Okay? So I don't know how visible this will be. Try this. Ooh, that didn't work. Alright, so that area then is delta x. And so this works pretty well, but it's a bit problematic if we have a velocity as a function of time that is not constant. So in this case, what I want to do is have velocity as a function of time. But now, let it be changing. Okay? And now, if we look at the average velocity over that time period, it might be, in principle, something like this. And now if you look at the area under V average times delta t, you'll get something that is here, and it really isn't necessarily the same as the area underneath this curve, right? And part of the problem here is that this V average is just an approximation of what the velocity is in this whole region. So we might be able to... So what that means is that because this is an imperfect measure of the velocity over the delta t, you might assume that your idea of what delta x is maybe not so great. Okay? And the more the V is changing over that interval, then the less well you're going to do with that. So one thing you could do is to take this piece, okay, and let's blow it up a little bit. And now, let's say that we have our T1 over here and our T2 over here. What I'd like to do is to divide it up into lots of small little T's. So let's have this interval. So what I'm going to do is so we're going to call this T1 plus 1, and this one would be T1 plus 2, dot, 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 all the way up to T2. Okay, so we have all these different little time intervals, and now each of these corresponds to a point on this curve, and in the midst of that curve, in that little piece, you will have a V average over that little interval. And now, graphically, you can see that V average, or that tiny little interval, is a much closer approximation to the function than this one over the large time interval. Okay? And in the limit of going to really, really tiny intervals, going from delta t to dt, right, that difference becomes negligible. So what I want to do is to get a good approximation of what this, or a good answer to what this x is, I actually want to divide this region up into an infinite number of little dt's and do that calculation. Okay? And sum them up. So what I'd much rather do is to say that delta x is equal to the sum of I equal 1 to, no, let's just say sum over some large number of intervals, I, V average over interval I, okay, times delta T ith interval. So I'm basically just taking that average velocity over all these little intervals and adding them together. So it's the same thing we did earlier with the big interval, except we now do it in much smaller little bits and add it together. You okay with that? So if I go to the limit where delta t goes to 0, then we get that delta x is equal to the limit of delta t goes to 0 of the sum of v average I times delta t I. And in this limit, delta t goes to a differential time dt. And V average just goes to V because it becomes instantaneous and as you go to a smaller and smaller time interval. And this limit is what we define as an integral. It's just a sum of this quantity, an infinite little sum over that interval. So this thing is what, way back in calculus, you define as the integral from T1 to T2 of V dt. You okay with that? You use integrals in physics when the function is changing over this little region that you're having to consider. And the reason you use integrals is because you can write down the relationship that you need. In our case, it's V times T. But I can't do it over a big period because V is changing over that period. So what number do I put in there? So what I do is I consider small little bits of T, so small that over that little bit, V doesn't change. That's what you mean when you say it's a differential. And V doesn't change, I now multiply V times that little time interval, which is really tiny, which is why it's dt, okay? And then I have to sum them up. And that's when you get the interval. Okay? So that's the whole strategy. And this is sort of general. I mean, it's very easy to then degenerate into just sort of remembering your rules. If g is equal to the integral of f dt, then f is equal to dg over dt, right? The derivative and the integral are sort of inverses of each other. And so that I hope you're pretty comfortable with in from calculus. So this leads us to a particular equation, okay, which is that delta x, which we will say x2 minus x1, is equal to the integral from t1 to t2 of v, the function v, over that period, which may or may not depend on the time, times dt. And this, then, is a potentially useful equation for you, and it is completely general. It depends only on how we define the relationship between the position and the velocity and the time. Okay? So any equation, at any point, any time you're ever given any problem in physics, this relationship holds true. Okay? It may or may not be useful to you. You may not be able to do anything with it. Because if I don't give you a function of z that you can then integrate, what are you going to do with it? But it is true. Alright? Sorry. Get a little choked up. It's a very special moment. It's our first derivation together. So proud. Okay. There you are.
Do you want a moment to take out your cell phones and take pictures? I'll post the slides. You could just do a screenshot off of that. I don't know if that's the same. I could stand here smiling under it. Maybe not. Okay, so there we go. I'm going to speed things up a little bit now because we're going to do a lot of the same sorts of stuff. We have a relationship between the velocity and the time and what we call the average acceleration. So that means that dv over dt, which we've actually already seen, is equal to a. And we can basically use the relationship that we know. We could derive it in exactly the same way we just did. It's the same sort of little summing up of an infinite number of little whatevers. So you end up with a relationship, which is that dv, or v minus v0, so I am switching notation here, so don't get too hung up on it. I could put... remember, again, I mean, you're all going to be scientists, okay? So one of the things that you have to learn to do as a scientist is to mix things up a little bit to keep everybody on the toes, all right? So sometimes I may look at an interval and call it T1 and T2. Sometimes I may look at an interval and call it T and T0. And because I'm such a great scientist, I will do this randomly just to keep you on your toes, okay? But don't let it throw you. What I try to do is define it one way when I'm doing something and try to be consistent. Okay, I'll try. You can remind me, but just watch out for it. I am going to rewrite this one just so you know. This could be x minus x0 from t0 to t of v dt. That is a bit more of the more general way of writing it. You don't think so much about the time going from t1 to t2, although sometimes the problems may be set up so you want to define it that way. But as these equations I'm about to derive are typically done, you'll have a start time which is like t0. And even later on, we may just drop the t0, consider that to be 0.
because no matter what you could do, you could define the time t0 as t equals 0, and it simplifies the equation. So you'll see it written in these different ways, so I just want to give you a heads up about that. So I'm going to switch from this 1 and 2 notation to the
0 denoting time equals 0, time t0, whatever. So this is the integral from v0 to v of dv, which is the integral from t0 to t of a dt.
So I hope you look at the form of, we had dx over dt is equal to v, and we get the difference in x is equal to the integral of the time of v. We have dv over dt is a, and we have the difference in v is equal to the integral from t0 to t of a dt. All right, so they're completely analogous. All right, with that? Now note that this then is equivalent to that in terms of being very general, because it is entirely based on the relationship between dt and a as we've defined it. Okay?
So again, this is general. All right. Now we're going to go to a very special case. I am going to look at the special case where A is equal to a constant. So we are no longer
looking at things in general. I have a very special case. And you might say, if it's so special, why are you dragging me to it? Because I'll never see it. It turns out that this special case, you will see a lot of the time. Okay? And just to give you a sense of how you run into it, we will find that our hero of the semester, Isaac Newton, came up with a rule that F is equal to ma. So that is, for an object of mass m that is moving with an acceleration a, it will move with an acceleration a if there is a force exerted on it. Okay, so F equals ma. If I have a constant a, it means there is a constant force on it, which we happen to run into a lot of the time. One example might be
if you throw something up in the air, unless you throw it really fast so that it goes to the moon or something, the force of gravity on it is going to basically be constant. So things like projectile motion, it's just a constant force. So you run into constant forces all the time. So it turns out, although this is a special case, it will be the one that you will use almost all the time. But I will promise you that every time you run into a problem that involves forces and you're needing to calculate something about the motion, always ask yourself, when you look at each of the dimensions that you're going to deal with, are the forces constant? Because if they're not, the equations we're about to derive, you cannot use. Okay? So plug and chuggers, beware. If you find yourself falling into a trap of, oh, here's an equation, I have a velocity. Oh, I know an equation that has a velocity in it. And you just start pulling out equations until you find something that sort of seems to fit. You've got to think, is there a constant force? The moment you see that you're under constant acceleration situation, okay, at that moment, the next thought that should cross your mind is, I have four equations that I can now use, which we're about to derive, okay? And each of these equations will contain three of the four kinematic variables, but not the fourth. And they're all four valid, and you can mix and match them depending on what the problem is. Okay, what are you missing? Okay, that may be what you want to, and you may not use the equation
We'll get there. You use the equation that works, or the several equations. You might have to solve them all at once.
So we're now in a situation where we have constant acceleration. So we go back to the equation that we just derived. V minus V0 is equal to the integral from t 0 to t of A dt. A is constant as a function of time now. This integral is over time. Therefore, I can pull A outside of the integral. A comes out. Whoa. It's a terrible design for this particular tablet PC that I have, which is it has little scroll bars at the bottom of the screen right where your hand has to lock. So occasionally it's just going to go all over the place. So I apologize about that. But this tablet seems to speak to the projector better, so I think I'm stuck with it. The integral of dt is just t evaluated between the limits of t0 and t. So this is A times t evaluated between the limits of t0 and t, which is equal to A times t minus t0. Okay? So we now have an equation which is V minus V0 is equal to A times t minus t0. And then what you will often do for simplicity is you will see this written such as let t0 equal 0. Whatever you're looking at, you could define it that way. So you will typically see this equation written as V is equal to V0 plus AT. And you'll note that with this particular equation that it includes V, it includes A, it includes T, but there is no X. And note also, you say, but it also includes a V0. V0 is a constant. It is whatever is an initial condition in the problem. It is not the same as a kinematic variable. Okay? V is changing potentially at time. V0 is whatever V0 is. Right? That's just a number. We have an equation, x minus x0 is equal to the integral from t0 to t of v dt. So x minus x0 is equal to the integral from t0 to t. We know that under the circumstances of constant acceleration, this v is nothing more than v0 plus at. Because we've derived that now. Times dt. So x minus x0, I can split the integral t0 to t of v0 dt plus the integral from t0 to t of a times t dt. X minus x0 is equal to v0 is a constant. It pulls out. You have just the integral of t dt, so this is just going to be t minus t0. So that's this piece. Plus, A is a constant. It pulls out of the integral. So I have A, integral from t0 to t of t dt. That particular integral here is equal to t squared over 2 evaluated between t0 and t. So x minus x0 is equal to t minus t0 plus a t squared over 2 minus t0 squared over 2. Let t0 equal 0. We have x is equal to x0 Oh. I forgot the V0 here, sorry. V0. The V pulls out here, and then the integral of from T0 to T of dt is just this T minus T0. So I have a V0 that multiplies it, which I need to put here as well. So x is equal to x0 plus v0t plus 1/2 at squared. And that is the form that you will typically see. And note that this one has x, t, a, but no v. v0 is not v. V0 is an initial condition. Any questions? We're good so far? Is that okay? Did I get what you want? Right. Yeah, I like using the tablet PC in a lot of ways, but when I use the three boards in here, there is more visible, so that is one of the drawbacks. Anything else? Okay, so we've defined V average to be equal to delta x over delta t. So we know that delta x is equal to V average times delta t by definition. But we are now working under the circumstances that A is constant. If you have a constant acceleration, then V changes at a constant rate. Whoa. If you have a constant acceleration, then V changes at a constant rate. So then, under those circumstances, the average of V is just the V that you end up with minus the V that you start with divided by 2, because it's changing at a constant rate. So under this circumstance, then we know that V average is equal to V plus V0 divided by 2. I may have said minus a moment ago verbally, but if it's changing at a constant rate, I can take the sum of the two endpoints and divide by 2, and I end up with what mean average is, by definition. So I want to use that for the definition of V average. Take this expression and this expression and combine them. So I end up with x minus x0, which is delta x, is equal to V average, which is V plus V0 over 2. Times delta t, which is t minus t0. And I will define t0. Oops, but I want to do that in a different color. I will define t0 to be 0. So I end up with an equation, which is that x is equal to x0 plus v0 over 2 times t. You'll see this written in different ways from time to time. So this one, note that it contains x, v, t, but no acceleration. So just to remind you, this one has no acceleration. This one has no velocity. This one has no position. So now we need to derive one that has no time. And then you'll have four independent but valid equations for situations where you have constant acceleration. So we start with this equation. And let's remind ourselves that we have V is equal to V0 plus AT, which we derived earlier. If I take this and I solve for T, then this becomes V minus V0 over A is equal to T. Crap. Yep. Okay. And then I will take this equation and I will take this piece and substitute in for T. So when I do that, I get x is equal to x0 plus v plus v0 over 2 times t, but t now, t is represented by v minus v0 over a. Those two pieces multiplied by each other, the v plus v0 and the v minus v0, is v squared minus v0 squared. Okay, so I have that x is equal to x0 plus v squared minus v0 squared over 2a. Or we can rewrite this as v squared is equal to v0 squared plus 2 times a, x minus x0. And that is the form where you will typically see it. Sometimes you'll see this in a form where x... Sometimes you'll see these places where x0 has also been set to 0. So you might see this as v0. V squared is equal to V0 plus 2AX. Okay. In this case, as ordered, we have V, A, position, but no time. Alright? So far all we've done is define our kinematic quantities, and then using those definitions make one assumption about constant acceleration, and then out pop these four equations. Okay? And so now we want to learn how to use these equations in physics problems. So let's do an example to get a sense of how this works. Okay. Let us suppose that we have All right, so suppose we have a tree. And on this tree, we have a woodpecker. I don't know if you've ever really sat and watched a woodpecker go at it, but they can be pretty vicious. All right, so we got a woodpecker. All right, I'm a physicist, not an artist. Actually, it's sort of amusing, though. I'm a published art. I've written two books that have my drawings in them.
amazing. People will buy it, and well, no, they're not being bought very much, but
I just thought it was really weird. At some point I wanted to write a certain book,
and we floated that idea to some publishers, and one of them came back and said, well, I don't want you to write that book, but I'll let you write this book. So I did like this pictorial book on relativity and quantum physics, which was a lot of fun to do. And the whole idea was, they said, well, why don't you just write a bunch of text, and then we'll have some artists come. And I thought, well, that'd be really lame, because the artist could be totally lame, right? I have no idea what the artist is going to say. So I said, I'll tell you what I'll do is I'll make sketches, and I will write the text according to these sketches, and the artist needs to sort of work within the spirit of that. And that actually worked out okay, and the artist has some great ideas, and sort of together we made it sort of work. But some of my drawings snuck through because they were in such a hurry at the end. I guess they ran out of money to pay the artist or something. So I was very excited when the student book came out. I'm like, I'm a published artist. I don't know. If you're a physics geek, that's pretty amazing. So I've been rubbing it into Heather Layton ever since. Okay, so we have a woodpecker, and if you've seen woodpeckers go at it, okay, they hit the tree pretty hard, okay? And I don't know if you ever thought about that, but it means that the woodpecker brain is getting shaken around pretty good, right? And you hear all this crap about brain damage in football. Imagine if we took our little 10-year-olds and, you know, like woodpecker. They wouldn't last very long. Right? Now you laugh. You've never had kids, most of you, I imagine. It's not as far-fetched as you might imagine. I can almost guarantee you there will come a time that you will at least think of wanting to do that. But something will stay your hand. And that's when they discover the timeout. It's better than bashing their heads against the wall. Okay, so we're going to say that V0 is equal to 0.6 meters per second. And if you are a biology geek and you go out and you're studying woodpeckers, you might on average decide, and it will depend on the kind of wood they're hitting and everything, but in this particular example, and honest to God, I stole this problem from someplace. I think that's probably not a crazy number. Often these problems are set up where somebody actually does a little homework and tries to come up with reasonable numbers, but I can't guarantee it. So if you really do know something about woodpeckers and I'm wrong, just correct me after class at some point. I'll try to get the numbers right, but I don't know. Anyway, the head comes to a stop in 2 millimeters. And so the question that I want to look at is, what is the acceleration of the head in units of G? Okay, G we will talk about quite a bit, but this is a particular value, 9.8 meters per second squared, which corresponds to the acceleration an object in free fall on the surface of the Earth experiences. Okay? So that is the force with which you are being held to the ground. That is the force that you are feeling basically when you're lying in bed. Okay? That is the force that you think of as your weight. It would be your mass times this acceleration. So when people talk about 2 g's, it would feel like you're twice as heavy, okay? And if you pay attention to, I don't know, probably Top Gun or whatever, they'll talk about the acceleration, the number of g's they feel for certain maneuvers, right? And effectively, it's as if you're in a gravitational field that is that much stronger. So you can imagine if all of a sudden I turned on gravity to be 10 times what it currently is, there'd be all sorts of awful things happen, including the blood would rush out of your head and you'd all pass out. Okay, so which happens when you fly airplanes, if you aren't flying United, but you're, you know, flying, I don't know, some fighter jet. Okay, so
So we talk about acceleration sometimes for these types of problems, units of g. So just units of 9.8 meters per second squared. So the question is, what is the acceleration if I know the distance over which it stops? I'm assuming, and this may not really be true, but we're going to assume that we have constant acceleration. And if I were writing this problem for an exam, I would have screwed up if I didn't make a statement to that effect. If it's not written on the problem and you have to make such an assumption, you better say, I am making the assumption of. Okay. But in this case, we're going to assume during the motion where basically the beak hits the wood until the head stops, which is the 2 millimeters, that the acceleration is constant. Okay. Which probably isn't true in reality, but it probably isn't so far off from being true. I mean, this isn't a crazy calculation that we're doing. Anyway, in this case, what do we know? We know V0. We know X minus X0. Oops. We know the final velocity. V is equal to 0 by definition. The head has stopped. Okay? And what we want is A. Alright, so when I'm doing this, I would say in a couple of weeks, the 4 equations you'll just know because you'll be saying them all to yourself all the time. But the moment you see constant acceleration, I actually just stop what I'm doing and I write those 4 stupid equations up. Okay? And so I have them there to refer to. Okay, or you can turn to the page in your book or whatever it is. But you know you have all 4 of them. So because I've already got the problem done up here, I happen to know that a very useful, all 4 are valid, okay? And you might find that if I gave this problem, for example, to the class and asked you to work it out, we'd probably have 5 or 6 fundamentally different solutions for this, where people sort of took this stuff and calculated it in different ways using some combination of these equations. Okay? And that's okay. They all work. So, but in this case, because of what we're given and what we want, V squared is equal to V0 squared plus 2A X minus X0 is very useful. In this case, we start out, let me assume that the direction of motion is positive as the head is going into the wood, okay? So plus is that way. So that means the head is moving at 0.6 meters per second squared to start with. It stops at 2 millimeters in, and that's 0. Okay? X minus X0 is the distance that it moves into the wood, and that's 2 millimeters, or 0.002 meters. And from this, we can now just calculate the acceleration algebraically. And what you find is the A is equal to minus 90 meters per second squared. What does the minus sign mean? Okay, the velocity is slowing down. Yeah, the minus sign, if I've defined it to be positive, a certain direction, which would be in the direction of the initial velocity. The acceleration being negative means it is acceleration. The acceleration is that way, which means the velocity has to be becoming less and less if it's going that way.
if the initial velocity, if the velocity happens to be going that way, it would be going faster and faster. But whatever it is, the change in the velocity is sort of pushing it that way. Okay, so it's getting less and less. So less than zero.
So you got to watch the signs. And now if we want to know the number of g's, we take this minus 90, divide by 9.8, take the absolute value, because, and this is roughly 9 g's. You okay with that? All right, so now it turns out, well, okay, so the second question we want to, I'd like to answer is how much time. Does it take the head to stop? So in this case, we have v is equal to v0 plus at. The acceleration we just calculated has minus 90. v0, we know, is the 0.6 meters per second. The final velocity is zero, so we can just calculate the t then algebraically with this. And what we get is that t is equal to minus 0.6 over minus 90, which is equal to 6.7 milliseconds, which is 0.0067 seconds. Okay, so that's pretty fast. Now, one of the reasons why I think these numbers aren't crazy, because it actually talked a little bit about the biology of what was going on in the woodpecker head. Apparently, the woodpecker brain is suspended by some tendons that will stretch as the head is hitting the wood. And so, if we assume that the tendons stretch, and what that means is that the head may stop, but the brain can still move a little bit. So you're stopping the brain over a longer time. Okay? That means the acceleration of the brain is less than it would be otherwise. So we're about to become less. Instead of 9 g's, it's going to be something like 4 g's. And that's what's important when you're talking about brain damage. Right? When you're in a car accident, what gets you is the acceleration of your brain. And you may think, what do you mean? Deceleration. We have deceleration in English. That's a great word. But in physics, it's acceleration the other way. Right? So that's, you can find that as positive. When you hit the windshield, your brain is being accelerated in a negative way. Okay. And in the end, that acceleration is exerting forces on the mass, right? And the tissue kind of cannot take it. So that's the deal. So the whole game in head gear or woodpecker design, if you're playing God, is to basically try to increase the amount of time over which the important pieces have become soft, because then you're decreasing that acceleration. So the tendons stretch so that the brain comes to a stop in 4.5 millimeters instead of the, however far it was we said, the 2 millimeters. So it actually stretches a little bit. Okay? And so in that case, v squared is equal to v0 squared plus 2ax minus x0 allows us to calculate the acceleration to be equal to minus 40 meters per second squared, or about 4g. And that may make the difference between survival or not, that kind of thing.
Okay, any questions on that? Alright, so these equations are useful when considering motion in one dimension. We can do incredibly complex problems by basically deconvoluting things in three dimensions into three one-dimensional problems. And we can also do the next stage of complexity to these types of problems is to have two one-dimensional problems tied together. So one example,
example problem that I want to do would be where imagine if you lived in an... When I was in graduate school, I lived in an apartment in Queens, New York. And it was an apartment building. And unfortunately, I was not far from the garbage chute. But no matter what I did, and I mean, how noxious the chemicals were that I sprayed in my apartment to get rid of the roaches, they would always reestablish. So I actually got a cat. And I hope roaches are nutritious. That's all I have to say. This cat would chase roaches. And it was... You have no idea how big a roach a cat can actually eat in one go. It's pretty amazing. At any rate, so we're going to suppose that we're in our little apartment, okay? And we see a little roach. And roaches tend to like to run for the cracks, right? They survived for all these years for a good reason. And so let us suppose that you spot this roach, okay? And then game is on. Roach sees you, you see the roach, and then the game is on. Because the roach is going to run for the wall, and you're going to run for the roach. Okay? You start from zero velocity, roach starts from zero velocity. You may have some acceleration, roach may have some acceleration, or we can define the problem a constant acceleration, okay? And now, what you see is that we basically have two one-dimensional problems that get tied together, okay? We have how far the roach can get as a function of time, and the amount of time it takes to get to the wall. At the same time, we have the same thing for this person, okay? And so the real question is, if in the same time the roach doesn't quite make it to the wall at the time the person makes it to that same point, you've got one dead roach. Right? If the roach can make it to the wall in the amount of time, in less than the amount of time it takes this person to make it to the wall, the roach is safe. So you have the two one-dimensional problems, but now the position and the time sort of tie together in the context of the problem. And so now, one of the things that you have to confront when doing these problems is to slow it down and read the problem very carefully and get a concept of what the problem is in your head. Okay? You have to paint that before you jump into the equation. Alright? You might be able to just jump into the equations if it's a single little thing, but the minute the problem becomes a little more complex, you really need to make sure you fully understand the problem. When we're doing exams in here, if you have any confusion as to how to interpret that problem, you ask me. Okay? And I want you to do that because I may have screwed up, okay? If I get asked the same thing four times, I'll stop the exam and clarify for everybody. Right? I am trying not to make this a class about English language, but we are completely tied up in that because you will have to be able to read these word problems and out of that get a conceptual picture of what the physics is. And it is from that you figure out how to solve the problem and pull out the equations and stuff like that. So you really want to be careful right at the start. And so as you move into this, just remember that and think about how you're interpreting the problem. In particular, when you find in a homework problem or whatever that
you're having trouble, remember, is it because I'm interpreting it incorrectly to begin with, or is it because I don't know how to solve equations, or I'm using non-constant acceleration, you know, constant acceleration with non-constant. I mean, you need to think far enough ahead to figure, you need to figure out what is going wrong so you can work on that, okay? I was going to say happy weekend, but we're here tomorrow to talk about statistics. So I will see you then.
What about the homework?
You can put, if you have your homework with you, just put it up in one of these boxes.